Our star guest today has been dancing with the Royal Ballet for over 40 years. He trained at the Royal Ballet School and entered the company in 1983. He was promoted to soloist in 91, principal character artist in 97, and then appointed ballet master in 2001. As if that wasn't enough, he then became rehearsal director in 2017. Is there anything in the Royal Ballet this man hasn't done? Let's find out. Christopher Saunders, welcome to Community Connections and Read on the Radio.
Hi, Andrew.
You must have the Royal Ballet running through your veins.
I guess it is a little bit, yes. I mean, I have spent most of my life from the school through to where I am now, so absolutely.
Did you grow up within a performing family? Was dancing something that was inbred in you almost, or was it something new for you?
Oh no, it's in my family. My aunt was my dance teacher. And she married Ben Stevenson, who was a dancer in the Royal Ballet, but also was sort of well known for going over to America, setting up Houston Ballet. Well, not setting it up, but sort of making it sort of a world famous company, setting up the school. And my mother was in the theatre until she married my father, and I have cousins that were actors and that. So yeah, some form of theatre has always been in the family.
It was destined by the sounds of it, Chris.
Yeah.
So, when did you take those very tentative steps in dance, which is a very specific art form, isn't it? Were you involved in other types of performance before you decided to focus on dance?
Oh yes. I love singing and I love tap. And those are my two main loves, really. Ballet was sort of on the side. When I was nine, I was in Gypsy with Angela Lansbury, which was a massive sort of awakening as to really, without realizing that the theatre was sort of where I wanted to be, the buzz that I sort of got, even as a 9-year-old. And I was sort of the youngest member of the cast, and I must have been a bit of a pain, really, because I kept knocking on the door, going, "Oh, Miss Lansbury, can I come in?" Or, I was just, I got the Tolsa to teach me his routine, and I loved it. I was like a sponge, just sort of soaking up as much as I could.
A lot of youngsters at that age wouldn't really have taken in the gravitas of the people they were performing with, but it seems that Angela Lansbury really struck a chord with you.
Oh, she was, yeah. And I mean, I'd grown up watching Gene Kelly movies. And I guess because the theatre sort of life, it was in my family, these were all names that I was familiar with. So I knew maybe not as much, but I'd seen her on black and white movies. And I think what struck me was just how. And actually, sort of later in life, how really wonderful and beautiful she was as a person. She was just so kind and generous and giving. It was incredible.
Generosity can really make a difference to youngsters up and coming, can't it? That can be the difference between encouraging you and potentially putting you off.
Yeah. Oh gosh, absolutely. Well, so much so when she was back in London. Oh, I guess it must have been about 10 years ago now, doing Blithe Spirit. I'm not someone that likes to push myself out there too much, but I thought, and my wife sort of went, "Go on, send a letter." So we both went and saw the play and came away, and I was humming and hawing. So I wrote a letter, and I've put in a photograph of that time in the production and encircled myself. And she replied and she said, "Oh, if you come and watch see the show again, please come backstage." So I went again the next week. Well, I mean, to show how wonderful she was, she didn't just say, "Oh, hello." She asked me how things were going in the Royal Ballet. So she'd obviously looked up to see what I was doing, or someone had, a PA or her brother or whoever was sort of overseeing everything. And we had this sort of 30-minute conversation, and I just thought, my love for her as a child was even stronger as an adult. She was just incredible.
And now she's no longer with us. That must seem
Yeah.
even more special.
Yes, absolutely.
Chris, let's go back to the beginning of your time with the Royal Ballet. You trained at the ballet school. How was that getting into? Because I'd imagine the competition is Fierce.
Yeah, it is fierce, and we'd actually it all started. We'd gone on a summer holiday, a very early summer holiday, sort of end of June, beginning of July, with my uncle. He'd come over from America, and we were having a conversation, and I said I wanted to do musicals. That's what I wanted to do when I grew up. I didn't really like ballet, and as soon as I said I didn't really like ballet, his hand hit the table. Boom. He said, "What do you mean you don't really like ballet?" He said, "If you want to stand a chance in any musical, you've got to have a good, strong ballet technique." And I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "I know what." He said, "I'm going to write to a friend of mine so you can go and do, see if you can go and do class just with boys." He said, "Because you're, you know, so at that time, I was one of the few boys that was doing sort of ballet." I didn't realize that friend of his was Barbara Fuster, who was at the time the artistic head of the Royal Ballet School. So we got back from our holiday, and there was a letter on the doormat saying to my parents, saying it was their last week of term, and would Christopher like to come and spend the day with the year one boys? At that time, they were year one. I think it's now year seven. But it's the 11-year-olds. So I thought, oh, okay, this is going to be great. So my father drove me up there, and I spent the day. And it was Jonathan Cope's year. They were the lowest class at that time, and I spent the day with them. I did class with them. I spent the day in the garden, and you know, it was the last week of term, so they didn't really have a lot of academic work. In fact, they had hardly any, and they were sort of getting ready for their school show. And my parents came to pick me up, and Barbara Fuster said that there was a spare place available. Would I like to join in September? She said, "Christopher is going to be very tall. He's got a lot of puppy fat, and but he obviously clearly loves to dance."
That was like flicking a switch.
It was, and actually, me being me, I'm very I like a challenge, and I like to be spontaneous, and this was new for me, really. So I was like, well, okay, yeah, absolutely. I'll have a go at this. Who knows?
At what stage at the Royal Ballet School did you really think to yourself, I can do this. I can really make a living out of this.
I don't know that I ever thought I could make a living. I thought there was a time when I was sort of 15, 16 that I thought, well, you know what? I'm enjoying this. And also my now wife was in my class, Tracy Brown, Tracy now Saunders. So we were together the same school year. We were a very small, close year. And I just thought, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I've got to do it now, and I can do it. There's going to be a time when I can't do ballet, but I can still put my tap shoes on and sing. So in my head, I was always thinking, do it now, give it everything I've got. But if I wanted to go back to a musical, I could sing and dance in my 60s.
When we look at your career, and I'm asking this from very much a non-ballet viewpoint, I love ballet, but I don't know a huge amount about the technicalities of it. But you progress to soloist, and then as you progress through your career, I guess there's a natural tendency to then move to the principal character artists, which possibly are not quite as intense when it comes to dancing as the soloists. Would that be a fair summary?
Yes. Well, I mean, that category really sort of came about because when I joined the company, there were no character principal artists. They were all principals. So Derek Rencher, Sandra Connolly, and all different levels of principals. Sandra Connolly had done a lot more sort of the classic principal roles. So that group of artists was a lot bigger. And through negotiations with Equity, and I guess under Anthony Dow's directorship, we had the category of character principals. I think it's a brilliant one. What happened with my career is I sort of got to that soloist level. I did a couple of principal roles, dancing with Darcy and Agon, and with Leanne and Viviana and Gloria, and sort of But I knew I was never going to be the prince. And actually, I didn't want to be the prince. I'd seen the amount of stress that Johnny Cope had gone under, and because we were quite close and good mates. And I sort of, I still do love being on that stage. And I love the challenge, but I saw that stress and what it could do. And I thought, I'm lucky because I'm not having that stress, really. And then I got the chance. I actually asked if I could learn Tybalt. That was really one of the first sort of, and I'd never really asked to learn anything. But I sort of thought, oh gosh, okay. And I said, I'd love to learn Tybalt. And I think Anthony said to me, oh, he said, but you're such a nice person. And I said, well, I can act bad. And he went, oh yes, you make a terrible, horrible fox, or nasty fox, Mr. Fox. So I. That was sort of my first step on the sort of the character artist sort of rung, really, because I'd been a Wilfred, but a lot of us have been Wilfreds. And yeah, I guess that was the first, and I sort of that and I loved it. And I guess when I get on stage, I find it very easy to not be me, which I think has helped.
You've performed in so many productions over the years, but one that really stands out to me and one that I watch regularly on DVD is Carlos Acosta's version of Don Quixote. I don't think there's a dancer alive that can play Don Quixote the way that you do. And I think possibly it comes back to that expression used earlier on about, oh, you can't play nasty characters. Well, you can, we know that. But there's something nice and friendly and almost fatherly about Don Quixote, isn't there?
There is. And, you know, it's funny because Carlos's production, I was sort of playing two parts, really, because I was the Don, but I was also trying to learn the whole ballet for staging it and rehearsing the company in the future. And so it was quite an exhausting time. And I guess Carlos, having worked with us as a company for so long, knew us all and knew us as, especially us character artists. Knew what we could do with a role without sort of giving us too much information. Because he really sort of gave us very little information for all those character roles, but he trusted us. And in fact, in Carlos's Don Q, the Don really has very little to do. He starts with the prologue, you make your entrance into the town square, and then it's all sort of what I call ad lib. And pantomime until there is a specific mime to do. And then again, there's a lot of, and we're all different when we take on roles. And I like to have a voice in my head when I take on a role. And just sort of last week, I was up in Birmingham, help sort of coach it for their return of the production. And so when I'm teaching a role, I sort of change voices dependent on characters. And in my head, for me to get across the character of Don Q, I become a little bit Shakespearean. I sort of go into look over there yonder, past hills. Now I know he's not English and I know he's not Shakespearean, but in my head, those are the sort of words I'm saying because I can't speak Spanish to sort of try and get the right character across. I never have to tell anyone those words, I just have them in my own head.
It strikes me that you portray him very much as the dreamer that I think he is known to be within the book, and that comes over very clearly. Something else interesting about Don Quixote, particularly, is that you've got a number of principal character artists on stage, haven't you? It's not just yourself. You've got, in this particular production, Gary Avis playing the innkeeper, you've got the fop, you've got Sancho. So, although there's a lot of dancing around, there's a lot of character acting amongst the four of you.
Absolutely. And it's brilliant because there's also, we all know each other so well. And we also trust each other so well. So there's a freedom in there. And there has to be a freedom because then it keeps it alive, show after show. And I mean, the hard thing is actually when we swap around, there is that moment when we sort of look and think, oh, which one am I? There have been a couple of moments where we're going to go and do a bit of mime, and then you suddenly realize that actually, no, you're wearing the beard and you're the innkeeper instead of the don. So it's, but yeah, I think it's love, but it's all, you know, it's lovely. There's that's what I love about theatre. It's wonderful performing with us all when we know each other, but also then when you have new people come into the roles, if there's a new Sancho Panza, especially for the Don, that's just as fun because I want to encourage them to be and do their own things. And at the same time, I then have to react to whatever they're doing. So that's sort of quite exciting because you don't know what someone else is going to do, especially when you don't know them as well. So it's always fun. And that's why I think it's great to still be doing it and performing.
You have done so much. We can't really do more than scratch the surface today. But what are your plans at the moment, Chris? Are you working on anything at the moment?
Well, yes, I at the beginning of this season, I was actually in Paris for 6 weeks, sort of staging Chris's Corybantic Games, which again, I mean, was just incredible to work with that company, and I loved every minute of it. And now I'm up in Birmingham. I couldn't go up there for the whole time, so I'm going up for 2 days a week because we've got Giselle going on here. I'm then staging Myling with Laura for the company, and then I go to Dutch National for 3 days to teach, which I was in shock about, Symphony in C for Ted Branson's farewell gala. I was asked to go over there, and the trust had agreed that I think because I've been a part of all the Balanchine ballets since I became ballet master in the company, so for that sort of 25 years, they've sort of allowed me to go and, because they can't find anyone else at that time, to go and teach it to Dutch National, which I'm very excited about. It's just a balance between staying here at the Royal Ballet, which is my home, and Kevin very kindly allowing me time to sort of go abroad. And part sometimes if I was younger, I sort of think, oh, I love going away, but actually it's quite exhausting. Traveling and setting the whole ballet and coming back. So it's sort of, I've found a nice sort of balance, which is wonderful. And I plan to keep on going.
This is excellent news. One final question before we say goodbye to you, Chris, today, and thank you for your time. When you stand on the stage of the Royal Opera House, the leading opera house in the world, I think anyway, and you look back over your career, can you imagine what your 9-year-old self when you were appearing with Angela Lansbury would have thought of where you are now?
Well, I sort of, I don't know. I mean, deep down, I'm proud of everything I've done, really. I've always just tried. Who knows? You never know what tomorrow has. I never look too far ahead. But when I look back and I think of those, being in the studio with Rudolph and Margot and being on stage with Leslie and Wayne, and there are so many names and so many wonderful, wonderful dancers and people that along the way, in a way, have helped me sort of become who I am and where I am today. So, and I'm just a little boy from Gosport who wanted to be Gene Kelly, to be honest. So I sort of pinch myself and think, wow, actually, that's not bad going. 43 seasons. I think I start on the 3rd of February. So, yeah, it's sort of sometimes a little bit of a pinch me moment. But I'm not going to look too far ahead. We just keep going.
What a wonderful way to finish our time together. Chris Saunders, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute privilege. And carry on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much.